Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We've got a lot to share. We're going to talk about how, if you have cancer, exercise can help you live a longer life. If you have hay fever, how the pine tree powder can make an enormous difference. How anxiety can weaken your bones, and why you should do something to deal with that on a daily basis, and how social pressure can affect what we remember. Scientists track the brain activity as false memories are formed, and most memories are false. If you are pregnant and you take some antidepressants, you can increase the risk of autism spectrum disorder in your child. Another article, however, shows that prenatal vitamins lower autism risk. Chinese medicine, an ancient herb, is being used to help against pancreatic cancer, and study links poor sleep quality to reduce brain gray matter in Gulf War vets. What can we do to reverse that? Vitamin A can benefit TB patients and foods that fight cold, and more on health and nutrition. From our environmental segment today, we will be looking at gas hydrofracking, which is going to be in 50% of Great Britain. That's not good. How the General Accounting Office reports that drinking water at risk from underground fracking water injection sites, when you consider how many tens of thousands of these sites there are, how many people would be affected by pollution of their groundwater. We're looking at something that's a national issue. Also just released, we'll be the first to break this for you, the blood composition of monkeys that lived right beside Fukushima or near it has been altered in a really bad way. That means that the blood in humans could be altered similarly. So I'll give you all the latest on the environment. Then from my guest today, William Blum, historian, critic of American foreign policy. He's reported from three different continents. By the way, he was one of the founding editors of the Washington Free Press, the first alternative newspaper in Washington, D.C. He worked at the State Department, and he quit because of his opposition against the Vietnam War. And he exposed the CIA misdeeds and operations. He also reported from Chile on Allende's socialist experiment and with former CIA officer Philip Agee to expose CIA misdeeds. Today, America's faux democracy. We don't have a real democracy, but we're exporting our fake democracy to the world and the quest for global domination. You won't want to miss that. Let's begin. We have a lot to go through. From the Times of India, and by the way, one of the more respected newspapers in the world, there is new hope for people with brain cancer. They're able to exercise. They live significantly longer than patients who are not able to do so. The study by scientists at Duke Cancer Institute, North Carolina, shows that exercise improves how cancer patients feel during and after treatment and extends their lives. This was published in the Journal of Clinical Oncology. So, if you know someone who has cancer, if it works for the brain, it's going to work anywhere else. And also, when you're highly aerobic, that in itself kills cancer cells. We have millions of Americans suffering from hay fever. A new research report from the University of Gothenburg in Sweden, published in the peer-reviewed journal Pediatric Allergy and Immunology, shows that they have found a possible cure of hay fever that is, well, itchy eyes, runny nose in the summer, and it's simply a powder made from pine trees. The cellulose nasal spray forms a barrier over the membrane lining the nose and filters out allergens like tree pollen and flower pollen. So, quote, the cellulose powder has no adverse effects, and this fact makes it a particularly attractive treatment for children end quote. Keep in mind, there is an ad currently on television in the United States showing that if you have allergies, you take a spray. They also say that you can die from it. The side effect is death. So I'm offering insights of something that is completely natural, can cure hay fever. That doesn't cure it. The drugs don't cure it. And with no toxic side effects. We know that anxiety is bad for you for several reasons. Because your cortisol levels, which are meant to help us when we need for about a minute to 2 minutes, increase strength, energy, oxygenation of our tissue, our senses of sight, smell, touch, our musculature system, all becomes ready to either run or fight. But when you keep it on all the time because you're depressed or anxious or fearful or insecure, you harm yourself. And one of the ways you harm yourself, according to the latest research done in Australia and Norway and published in the Journal of Affective Disorders, is you weaken your bones. Now, how's that possible? Well, they studied 8,000 men and women who had depressive and symptoms and anxiety symptoms, and it shows that the minerals are not getting in there. That's because I believe that once you're anxious, you completely disrupt your normal digestive system. Food doesn't then take its time, biodegrade down through the natural, let's say, hydrochloric acid, pepsin, and other fat and protein breaking down molecules in the stomach, in the mouth, and in the intestine. As a result, you're getting a lot of poor digestion, malabsorption, and then you don't have the nutrients necessary to form strong bones. So that is one of the reasons. But remember, anxiety equals weak bones. I can remember the McMartin case. And what struck me at the time, and I did several programs on it, was not that the American media went nuts, and especially a woman writer for the New York Daily News who seems to be chronically nuts. I don't think she's ever written anything positive in her life. She's just really mean to the bone. But she never apologizes when she is wrong, which is most of the time. And what concerns me is that they all had said that the McMartin family were all guilty. Mind you, this isn't the longest trial in California history at that time, and the most costly trial in California history. Little background. There was a small family, the McMartins, and they had a daycare center. It was all in glass, so everybody could see everyone else, from the principal, everywhere else. And so what happened was, one child had been seen by a sociologist, and the sociologist, as it would later turn out, was the key to influencing this child, that the child had been abused. In point of fact, the child had not been abused. But that led to dozens of parents claiming their children had been abused and the children claiming they had been abused. All forms of crazy notions began to manifest, none of which ended up being true. In the end, they were found innocent of all charges. They were not guilty of anything. But the American media was guilty because it showed how people's personal fears and rages and biases project against any issue or person. At that time, then a whole door opened up to people claiming that they had been abused by their parents early in life, but now they were remembering it for the first time. Again, we did programs showing this is nonsense. This is from Science Daily. This is today, and this is a major study, and it is from the Institute of Neurobiological Department with a Professor Dolan and others, University College London. Here's what it says, and this is published in a very respected journal, Science. Quote, how easy is it to falsify memory? New research at the Weizmann Institute shows that a bit of social pressure may be all that's needed. The study, which appears in the journal Science, reveals a unique pattern of brain activity when false memories are formed, one that hints at a surprising connection between our social selves and memory. The experiment conducted by Professor Yadam Dubey and researchers at the Institute's Neurobiological Department took place in four stages. And then they went through the whole study. And then they found that people wanted to conform to perceived social demands. And so the perceived demand of society became more important than the reality of what they had experienced. And that was startling. So then they found that this was in the brain. An analysis of the MRI data showing differences in brain activity between the persistent false memories and the temporary errors of social compliance. And the most outstanding feature of the false memory was a strong coactivation and a connectivity between two brain areas, the hippocampus and the amygdala. The hippocampus is known to play a role in long-term memory formation, while the amygdala, sometimes known as the emotional center of the brain, plays a role in social interaction. And the scientists think that the amygdala may act as a gateway connecting the social memory processing parts of our brain. Its stamp may be needed for some types of memories, giving them approval to be uploaded to the memory banks. Thus, social reinforcement could act on the amygdala to persuade our brains to replace a strong memory with a false memory. So, what does this mean in lay language? It means that almost never are our brains remembering anything completely accurately. To the contrary, what frequently happens is that based upon the circumstances we face in a given day, at a given moment, the subconscious, which represents 97% of the 50,000 thoughts we have per day, is taking something from our past and juxtapositioning it with something right now. So maybe someone's saying something to us that we don't like. We don't like maybe what they're saying, how we're being treated. Even if there's nothing really wrong with what they're saying, our brain has taken possibly what they've said out of context. And now we react emotionally. And we believe that it's based upon real feelings from real historical events, and more often than not is not. Now this can go so extreme that people end up believing things that never happened and then are absolutely convinced of it. You get enough people believing something, then watch out, because when you have a society that itself becomes overwhelmingly of a consensus mind, you've got problems. How so? Think of racism. Think of how many otherwise intelligent, well-educated, and reasonable people did not necessarily act out as overt racist, but held racist views and sentiments where they would not say it, but they felt it because of the memory that someone planted in them that became theirs. Think of the Holocaust. Think of 50,000 Germans, educated, aware, certainly tied into historical references, and then allowing, participating in, or encouraging, or being indifferent to the entire purge of gypsies, of African Americans or Africans, of Jews, where millions and millions died. And yet this was common knowledge everywhere in Germany. Anyone who tells you they didn't know is a liar. Everyone knew what was going on in Germany. And yet, I've been to Germany, and I've spoken with people from that time. And yeah, they knew, but it wasn't their responsibility. They didn't want to. And this is how it goes. This is how we can become conditioned by social consensus. Look at the people who believe we should have been in Vietnam. Actually look forward to it every night, because every night you got John Wayne kind of movie on television. And the only time you really started to question is when your daughter or son came back injured or in a body bag. Then suddenly it was no longer entertainment. It was something to be concerned about. Isn't it amazing how we don't engage until we are personally affected? We've taken on social memory. We look at our own history from a very warped perception. And we do it now. We've even forgotten about the lies told to us by the very people, the neocons, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Perle, all of them appearing on Fox and other places, the certainty of why Iraq had a weapons of mass destruction, the certainty that we would bring democracy, the certainty that people would honor us and cheer us. And these are the same people appearing now. They shouldn't appear anywhere now, except in front of a warden. These people should spend the rest of their life in prison because they have caused crimes against humanity. But at this moment in time, they're protected. But so was Pinochet and others until they weren't. In any case, this is all part of our collective denialism of what did happen and our putting into its place false notions of what did happen. So this is just one study showing you how it happens. And finally, prenatal exposure to certain antidepressants can increase the risk of autism. This is from Science Daily. Mind you, this is mainstream science, published in the Archives of General Psychiatry, one of the JMA's own archive journals. Quote, prenatal exposure to selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, that's your tranquilizers, especially during the first trimester, associated with a modest increase in the risk of developing autism spectrum disorder. Quote, the prevalence of autism spectrum disorder has increased over years. Use of antidepressant medications during pregnancy has also shown an increase in recent decades, prompting concern that prenatal exposure may contribute to increased risk of autism spectrum disorder, end quote. Now, do you think that this information, which is very important, shouldn't this be in the hands of the Surgeon General, who should go on television, head of the U.S. Public Health Service, the head of the National Institutes of Mental Health, and say, if you are pregnant, do not take. Seek counseling, professional counseling, fine, but do not take antidepressants. First, they don't work. They don't help you. And you might end up killing yourself, because they can also cause suicidal ideation. Not a word. Nothing. But if you take vitamins, you can lower the risk of autism. Now, don't you think someone should be talking about that? But they're not. And where did this occur? Well, this was in epidemiology. Quote, major article, prenatal vitamins lower autism risk. And that is a major article. I have the whole study here in front of me. Very positive. Not a word of it anywhere. So when we have good information, can save lives, it just doesn't seem to get out. And the University of Texas Health Center now shows that the bark of the amur cork tree, A-M-U-R, amur cork, C-O-R-K, tree, which has been used for centuries in the healing arts, is now being used against pancreatic cancer, and that's very positive. University of Texas Health Science Center are using it, and they have an article coming up right now in Clinical Cancer Research. It shows that the extract blocks pathways and inhibits the scarring that thwarts anti-cancer drugs, what we call fibrosis. And it's a process of uncontrolled scarring around the tumor gland. So once you have fibrotic tissue, the drugs cannot get to the cancer. This helps. So an ancient study makes all the difference in the world. That's our health and nutrition segment. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment, we have some really unusual guests because we have Professor Guy McPherson going to do a short commentary on how bad is the environment. Because we've been told we've got time. I'm telling you, we don't have time. It's here now. Extreme weather events. And then Matt Stein, MIT engineer, graduate, going to tell us what to do about it. Please stay with us. Welcome you to our continuation of our Sustainability and Survival series. Dr. Guy McPherson is a professor emeritus of natural resources, ecology, and evolutionary biology at the University of Arizona. He specializes in forest resources, energy decline, and climate change, and their economic consequences. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Gary.
Tell us the story of your research. Of the real science that does not blink, does not compromise, does not try to cater to people's fear.
So what we're talking about here is habitat for humans. It goes beyond the snowstorms and the ice storms and the significant drought events and the extreme rises in temperature in short periods of time. It goes well beyond that. And now we're talking about losing habitat for human animals. Methane release from the Arctic Ocean has been reported in several journal articles already. It was first reported in Science in March 2010. That's the first one reported in the refereed journal literature and the one that represents perhaps the gravest threat to habitat for humans. Sam Karana, in a paper not in the refereed journal literature, reaches the conclusion that we, because of that single self-reinforcing feedback loop, we are headed for a planet 4C above baseline by 2030 and 10C above baseline by 2040. We've never had humans on the planet 3.5C above baseline. So the habitat we need to survive, most notably including the food, is going to be seriously degraded at 3.5 or 4C. Already at 0.85C, we've lost about half of the phytoplankton from the ocean of the world. So I can't imagine that 3 or 4C will have a significant number of phytoplankton in the oceans, and that's the base of the marine food web. That's half the food we eat. The other half comes in the form of land plants, one way or another, and extreme cold events, such as occurred in two of the last 5 years, killed citrus trees in Tucson, Arizona, where I lived for many years, that were 80 to 100 years old. Two of the last five winters, there have been extreme cold events that killed 80 to 100-year-old citrus trees. That's cold in the Southwest. Tack on to that, the temperature rises. Once the temperature rises to 125, 130 degrees Fahrenheit for a few hours, that denatures the proteins in the plants. So it kills the plants. We're going to have a hard time getting along without land plants and without phytoplankton in the ocean. And already we're seeing significant degradation of those sources of our food, the base of the marine and terrestrial food webs. So I can't imagine a situation that gets any better. And methane coming out of the Arctic Ocean, is just one of those 30 self-reinforcing feedback loops. Another is methane being released as the permafrost melts, and that's throughout the world's boreal forests. In summer 2010, methane vents were measured at about 30 centimeters in diameter. By summer 2011, methane vents were measured a kilometer in diameter. So when the United Nations Advisory Group on Greenhouse Gases warned in October 1990 about rapid, unpredictable, nonlinear rises in temperature that affect ecosystem function, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about ecosystem function being disrupted and methane vents increasing a million-fold in size from one summer to the next.
Explain what a methane vent is.
Yeah, so in the permafrost, as the permafrost warms, it gives off methane, CH4, just as clathrates or cages of methane that lie on the bottom of the shallow sea in the Arctic Ocean. Just as those rise to the surface and the clathrates break off and are released into the atmosphere, so too does methane come out of the ground directly into the air when permafrost becomes permamelt and that's where we are now. And so those methane vents are just places where the permafrost has melted, where it's no longer solid. And so in summer 2010, those vents or holes, if you will, where it's liquid now instead of solid, those were 30 centimeters in diameter. Within a year, they were a kilometer across. And so that's rapid, nonlinear, unpredictable sort of response that ecosystems are exhibiting. So those are two of the major challenges with respect to maintaining habitat for humans.
Thank you. I appreciate you sharing your insights. My guest, Matthew Stein from Truckee, California, he's an engineer with a degree in mechanical engineering from MIT and a National Merit Scholar. He is also the owner of Aloha Aina Builders, which specializes in hurricane-resistant, energy-efficient, environmentally friendly homes. And he has spent a lot of time helping people acclimate to a more sustainable life. Nice to have you with us, Matthew.
Always a pleasure to be on your show, Gary. Thanks for having me back.
The people such as Professor McPherson is saying it's not in 100 or 50 or 75 years that we're going to have a collapse of our society. It's in the next 5 to 10 years we're going to start to see it. And then we start seeing the impact of environmental damage from Hurricane Sandy and others hitting us. So a lot of people who never thought they would move, never have to learn a new career, are now saying, if I'm going to get ahead of this, I'm going to have to go through discomfort and relocate myself. So that's where we begin our journey. So speak on these issues, please, and what people need to consider, whether they choose to move or remain where they are, because we're going to have both types of people listening now. Take your time and be as detailed as possible.
Well, for a long time, scientists have been warning that we're going to see in this century the rise of environmental refugees between climate change, droughts, floods, oceans rising. I guess if all of Greenland melts, we're looking at something like a 50-foot ocean rise, which is just kind of mind-blowing in terms of flooding most of the world's highly populated coastal cities. So it's hard to know exactly how fast and when it's going to happen, but I think that the quote you just gave, that we're going to see collapse, you know, extremely strained societies, failing states where we thought those states were so stable they would never fail, you're going to be seeing a lot of that happening within 5 to 10 years. And so the question then comes down to how can I do the best with what I have within my ability. Now, certainly if you have lots of money, and then it's you know, it's fairly easy to look, and you still have to decide where and what and when and how. But if you don't have much money, then don't think all is lost. Think in terms of resilience, like how can I focus on my skill sets? How can I do strategic partnerships with other people? You know, what you can't do by yourself, you can often do with, say, a partnership of 10 or 20 people. You might say, okay, let's pick a place out of the city in a rural area where there's fairly good water supply, where you're far enough away from major metro areas that you won't have, you know, hordes of people descending on it because it'll just be kind of too far to go. And you can pool your resources, and often these places are fairly cheap because they're far away from where the jobs are. So you can think of either a permanent relocation or a strategic partnership, or if you have enough money, doing, you know, your own sort of retreat center that's out of the city. And let's talk about where. You know, the obvious thing to start is someplace that makes a lot more food, grows a lot more food locally than is consumed. And again, as you mentioned with climate change, you have to keep that into consideration, because places like California's Central Valley, that's been the traditional breadbasket for America, there are a lot of farms now that the governor is just simply saying, I'm sorry, you have no water, because the people in the cities need to drink. And so your farm is just not getting its water allocation like it normally has. And, you know, hopefully things will be better next year, but this year you can't grow food. So that's, I mean, think about all those lives are being destroyed right now in the Central Valley of California with whole communities where that's the case, where they're just being told, you have no water, you can't grow food on your farm this year because there is no water for you. So it's a difficult question. I'm not claiming that there's any one right answer. And one of the things that I encourage people to do is to develop their own inner compass. That is, that in the DNA within each and every human being, there's the most amazing survival mechanism that nature built into us. It's this intuitive inner guide, inner, I call it the inner compass, that can see around the corners and know what to do. And in my books, I teach this pit of the stomach exercise, that through prayer and meditation and calming the mind, you can basically picture with pictures in your mind different paths. And by feeling the response in the body and ignoring the rational mind, because the rational mind won't have enough information to make a good choice, then you can allow this inner compass to point you in the right direction. And I've used it very successfully to make some very tough decisions in my life. And it works. And we all have that experience in our life of when, you know, intuitively we knew we needed to do something, and sometimes we listened, and afterwards we said, oh, thank God I listened to that, because I didn't know that this, you know, car was going to zip around the corner and there's going to be this big accident or whatever. And other times we ignored it, and afterwards we slapped ourselves in the face, the side of the head, and said, oh, my God, why didn't I listen? I knew intuitively I needed to do this, and I didn't, and I ignored it, and I got my fingers burned and my butt kicked, and, you know, we've all been through that. Okay, so from a practical point of view, if you're in a metro area and the grid goes down, think about, like, where do 10 million people pee and poo? What are they going to do when there's no water pumping and there's no sewage pumps working and there's no water treatment? Then think about what you're going to be drinking. I mean, think duck ponds when 10 million people are going to the bathroom outside. It's not going to be a pretty sight. And then think about, well, how do I stay healthy in a situation where there's 10 million people drinking out of duck ponds and, you know, there's raw sewage everywhere? How am I going to deal with that situation? So these are unpleasant thoughts. These are unpleasant pictures. But, you know, these are the realities of the world we live in, is that the nice, stable, high-tech machine that we've gone so used to depending on and it always being there, around the corner somewhere in the not-too-distant future, there's going to be some major hiccups and maybe even some long-term collapses. In the least, you're going to see situations like Hurricane Katrina and the tsunami and Hurricane Sandy where there's no water, there's no grid, there's no internet. You know, you may not have a roof over your head, and you may be hoofing it down the road with what you can carry on your back. And that's sort of a better scenario. You know, the worst scenarios are all-out collapse where there's been a solar storm or there's been an EMP, electromagnetic pulse, and the grid is down for months to years, and you're on your own. And in that case, you know, your ability to your resilience of your home or your backup plan is important. And your ability to be flexible and to put things on your back if necessary, or have a bicycle, a little trailer, or, you know, extra fuel and get as far away from town and nuclear power plants as you can, on your get-out plan. You know, these are all things that we kind of hope we'll never need to deal with, and we pray we'll never need to deal with them, but it's like car insurance. You know, nobody buys car insurance and says, I want to get in a head-on collision today. They buy that insurance, and you pray to God and hope to God you never need it. But if that day comes, you need it, then you thank God you got that insurance. And what we're talking about isn't the same thing. And most rational human beings will look at the changes we've seen in the last decade within the financial systems and within the weather and natural systems of the planet, like the collapsing oceans, the dying fisheries, there's massive amounts of shellfish die off in the world now from acidification in the ocean. These are all symptoms of huge dis-ease on the planet, that things are not right on Mother Earth, that everything is changing, that the rules of yesterday don't apply today. And the smart person looks at these signs and says, okay, it's not what I wanted, it's not my fantasy, but I'm gonna have to plan for and make changes in my life and in my plans to accommodate a changing future, to make my lifestyle, my habitation, my plans for myself and my family and my community of friends more resilient so that we can do the best we can and have a good shot of weathering these storms. I mean, you know, no one can see and plan for everything.
Thank you very much for being with us. Now, those are two new newsmaker updates. For those of you who think it can't happen or won't happen because you live on the Upper West Side and everything is perfect there, think again. I'm going to share the latest climate change results, statistics, over just the last few weeks. We're talking about right now. Massachusetts, quote, these are all official stories. Massachusetts town picks up the pieces after rare tornado strike. I didn't know you had tornadoes in Massachusetts, nor did the people living there, but they did. Venice Beach lightning strikes. Quote, I thought it was a bomb. Wildfire destroys 10 homes in Northern California. Obama signs emergency declaration over Washington State wildfire. Typhoon Ramosim leaves dozens dead after hitting China and Vietnam. Climate change is far more than just the weather. It is also creating other disasters. Washington's fires, quote, worse than expected, destroyed 100 homes and displaced hundreds. More deaths from more typhoons. I'm looking at a whole page of just typhoons around the world. Japan earthquake has raised pressure below Mount Fuji. Wildfire in southern Oregon destroys homes. Bathers run for cover as freak hailstone hit the beach in the middle of the summer in Russia. Black Saturday bushfire survivors face 18-month wait for help, $500 million in damages. Tornado hits Perth's southern suburbs. Winds exceeded 125 km. Two men die after tornadoes cut power to life support equipment. Wildfire in southern Oregon destroys homes and forces evacuation. Another typhoon, Typhoon Noguri, batters Japan. 500,000 Japanese leave their homes. Hurricane Arthur batters North Carolina. Oklahoma earthquakes linked to fracking wastewater wells. California wildfire rages through Pope Valley, area of Napa Valley. Tsunami-proof Great Wall of Japan divides villages. Some are safe, others are not. Earthquakes shake Oklahoma and Texas. Locals want to know why. Tornado damages homes and uproots trees in Indiana. Severe storms and tornado damage homes and power lines in Indiana. I have five pages from the Blue Mountain bushfires, California wildfires, Florida Everglades fires, Colorado tornado causes damage and flips a golf cart on a caddy, flooding in Afghanistan kills 80 people, Colorado mudslides, search called off by rescuers due to unstable conditions, wildfires in Arizona, North Dakota tornado injures 9 at an oil rig, evacuations of 1,000 in Alaska because of wildfires in Alaska. Three men missing after, quote, unbelievably big Colorado mudslide. Northern Arizona fire threatens Flagstaff as it grows in size. And we're talking about all this happening now. So just be aware that for those of you who don't want to face reality, we are in the tipping area of the environment. Now, we're going to take just a moment before we go to our guests. We're going to talk in a moment with America's one of its leading critics of our foreign policy, a reporter who had worked for the government and the State Department. He's going to talk about America's faux democracy exported to the world and its quest for global domination, William Blum. Before then, however, we have a special for you today, and it's a really neat special. This is not the same as our last special. This is just for the survival stuff, I started thinking a couple years ago about what would I want, what would I need if I had to leave New York City in a hurry. And I would leave at night, I would leave in the middle of the night, I have a bike, I would bike out a car, forget about it. And I would have a knapsack, I know what I put in the knapsack. And one of the things I want is I want at least 1 to 3 months worth of nutrient, my protein, servings of fruits and vegetables. Well, you can't go buy all that stuff. It's not going to be available. So I put all that stuff into a powder, and it's called survival stuff. I put in there a nutritional powerhouse. I have an all-natural vegan blend of protein, sprouted grains, seeds, fruits, vegetables, enzymes, 10 or 8 billion dairy-free probiotics, wonderful natural cherry pineapple flavor. Now, it normally retails for $200, but I've offered it for $132.95. Today, a lot of people say, what if I buy a second bottle or a third because I might want 2 or 3 months worth of supply because it's a gallon size. It's $119.95 per bottle if you buy more than one bottle. And what's in it? What am I getting when I buy it? You're getting some of the most powerful nutrients, and I selected these to blend them, and pea protein, brown rice protein, alfalfa, pumpkin seeds, flax seed, barley grass, carrots, kale, cauliflower, cabbage, parsley, ginger, spinach, celery, broccoli, asparagus, collard greens, apples, bananas, cranberries, strawberries, chlorella, spirulina, blueberries, blackberries, raspberries, oats, sprouted quinoa, sprouted kamut, sprouted spelt, sprouted amaranth, oat beta-glucan, chia seeds, alaria, dulse, laminaria, different types of enzymes like protease, amylase, lipase, salase, papain, bromelain, probiotics. That's what's in here. I don't know anything that would be more complete and more important for my survival if I had no regular source of food. And in a disaster, where is the source of food? If you're lucky to have a Red Cross near you, but what if there's a power outage and there is no Red Cross? There is no help coming. What do you do then? Do you kick yourself and say, damn, why didn't I think that it could happen? Why didn't I plan? That's like the person said, I'm not putting a fire extinguisher in here, and I don't want any health insurance. I don't want any car insurance. I don't want any insurance because I don't believe anything bad is ever going to happen in my life. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of people like that. But then there's the rest of us who know stuff happens. So I created survival stuff for those of us who care about what to do if something happens. And I just read you a list of things that actually are happening right now in the last 2 weeks. And it's going to get worse, a lot worse. So if you want some survival stuff, hopefully you'll never have to use it. By the way, I actually, you could replace the Ultimate Lifetime Diet Shake with this. So you can use it for other reasons. But in any case, if it's your only reason for using it to survive in the future, good enough. Call this number because you're getting this the last time, because when I go back into production, this is only an introductory offer, it will be at $200. So it's $119.95 when you order more than one bottle. Otherwise, it's on discount for $132.95. Call this number now, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, and get that now. Back in a moment with my guests. Please stay with us. To welcome all of you from all over the world. We're heard in 166 countries. I want to say hello to the 23,000 people living in the United Kingdom and the people in Ireland and the 96,000 people listening in India. We have people all over the world tuned in. William Blum is a historian, a critic of American foreign policy who has worked and reported on three different continents. He was one of the founding editors of the Washington Free Press, the first alternative newspaper in D.C., and he worked at the State Department, but he quit because of the Vietnam War. His most recent book, America's Deadliest Export, Democracy, published by Zed Books. He is the creator of the Anti-Empire Report, which can be found at his website, williamblum.org. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi, thank you very much.
We're constantly hearing from the White House and our legislators that we are exporting principles of freedom and liberty under the rubric of democracy to other nations. However, even at home, we no longer have a democracy. Therefore, it would be foolish for any nation to desire to import our distorted versions of freedom and liberty. How would you define the type of governments functioning in the United States today and how aggressively they're trying to get other nations to import our power structure?
Well, I would say what we have in the U.S. today is not democracy, but plutocracy, which is ruled by the rich, or some people would put it ruled by an oligarchy. But we call it democracy. And as far as exporting it, well, what we try to export is capitalism. We don't really care whether the countries that we go to war with or subvert in some other way, we don't care whether they're really democracy. In fact, we don't want them to be. A real democracy, we would not tolerate what the U.S. government does to the people there. So we actually prefer a dictatorship, but we'd never say that. And as it turns out, many of our closest allies in the world are dictatorships, like Saudi Arabia, the most oppressive nation in all of the Middle East, if not in the world. That's a very close ally to the U.S. And that's what the title of my book implies, America's Most Dangerous Export, Democracy, which means that we export war and bombings and invasions and occupations and torture and so other things like that, but we call it democracy, and that's what makes it dangerous. This deception, which we pull over the eyes of the entire world, and most of the world believes it. They still think of America as a beacon of democracy.
You have been covering the intelligence and defense scene in Washington for a long time, and one particularly confusing question that I hear people ask is, what in the world do our elected officials and their appointees actually believe? We hear campaign speeches that hit a nerve in people, otherwise they would not be elected. And then once in office, our politicians turn into a different creature, a different species. And it's no wonder that Obama and Congress approval ratings are so dismal and perhaps worse than any other time in American political history that polls have been taken. So what does Obama and his administration actually believe with respect to the cowboy foreign policy they are operating to destroy nations that don't abide by the Washington consensus and turn their back on Israel crimes against humanity and undertake military posturing against any leading nations such as Russia and China who have an economy that can challenge U.S. supremacy?
Yeah, we intervene in many countries and for many stated reasons, but I believe, and I've written this several times, that our current president, Mr. Obama, does not believe strongly in anything, really. He enjoys being president of the United States. He enjoys all the fringe benefits which go with that job, which are many, of course. What he really believes, I've been wondering this ever since I first heard him speak as a candidate for the primaries in 2008. I remember very well. I knew nothing about the man. I heard him speak on the radio. I listened to the whole talk, and when he was finished, my thought was, this man is not saying anything. It's just cliches and platitudes. What does he really believe? And as time has passed since then, that question has loomed larger in my mind. I don't think he believes strongly in anything. And so he's easily moved one way or the other by his own party or by the opposition.
Okay, let me interject for a moment here. What do you say about the ethics of our foreign policy when we now support fanatical groups, particularly al-Qaeda-related jihadi groups, as militarist henchmen to achieve our policy goals? We're supporting al-Qaeda in Libya. Look at that. And we supported al-Qaeda-like and radical groups, calling them moderate jihadists in Syria. Look at the consequences. We switched from Mubarak, who was a tyrant and a dictator, to the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, and then again to the current fascist group in power. So many commentators are suggesting that we are also supporting ISIS in Iraq. We help fund and arm terror organizations around the world. And of course, we continue to keep Israel, our most favored nation, with thousands of, actually billions of dollars of taxpayer-given money each year. How can you make sense of this hypocrisy?
It's not easy. And hypocrisy is the proper word to use. Our support of al-Qaeda types goes back even further than you mentioned. It began in Afghanistan in the 1980s. We supported the Islamist extremists there, which soon became al-Qaeda. And after that, we supported Islamist extremists in Bosnia and in Kosovo. And then later in Libya and Syria. And that's five examples. It's an amazing phenomenon when you consider all the propaganda that we're fed by our government about the war on terror. To think that all these years of the war on terror, the U.S. government has been actively supporting terrorists, serious terrorists, in various parts of the Middle East and Southeast Asia, or South Asia. It's an amazing contradiction. And this is almost never mentioned in the mass media. I mention it all the time in my writings, but I'm not the mass media. So your point is very well taken.
Right now, Russia and Israel are mostly on people's minds. Pepe Escobar wrote an excellent essay this week that we now have entered Cold War 2.0 with Russia. For all practical matters, a reapproachment between the two in the future is no longer an option, but an American foreign policy. And the U.S. will continue to escalate its aggressive stance against Russia and increasingly against China in order to remain top dog and ultimately seeking a regime change. So what is your take on the standoff and sanction threats the U.S. is posing towards Russia, and towards what end?
Well, I don't think we're going to have a major war between the U.S. and Russia. The U.S. policy for decades and decades has been to not invade countries which are able to defend themselves, and Russia is one of those countries. The U.S. picks on people who have no defense against aerial attack, for example. So I don't think that's the good news. We're not going to have a major, we're not going to have World War III. But in the meantime, people will be caught in between these two powers, like the poor people of Ukraine, who are suffering greatly. And the U.S., it's almost forgotten now, but the U.S. began all this stuff in Ukraine by supporting a coup which overthrew the democratically elected government of Ukraine back in January. That's how it all began. And and the people who overthrew him included prominently several neo-fascists. I mean, it's bad enough to be supporting Al-Qaeda types, but we also support neo-Nazis in Ukraine and elsewhere. It's just amazing when you think about what we actually do and what is reported in the American mass media. I read the Washington Post every day. I live in Washington. And I, after many years of reading it, I was saying now that the Washington Post is worse than it ever has been when it comes to U.S. foreign policy. It lies incredibly, and it just omits anything which is contrary to the foreign policy line. So that's very, it's very disturbing. It makes me very sad.
My final question for you today is, now that we know about the massive surveillance of American citizens and practically everyone else on the planet, and there's no question of growing influence of the private corporations, the mega banks, the military-industrial complex, they all impact our foreign policy, what does this say about our own domestic policy and the quest for global domination that the U.S. has embarked upon?
I'm not sure I follow your question. What is it to say about our own domestic policy?
Yeah, in other words, we're willing to spy on American citizens without justification, and yet that's a part of our domestic policy, spying on Americans.
Right, and spying on the whole world, of course.
Yes.
I just wonder when the world will get as angry about this as they should. The people in Europe are too polite or mild-mannered to really scream out in anger at this. Mrs. Merkel of Germany, her own private phone was tapped, and her response has been very muted.
What if it were reversed?
What's being done? I just wish some of these allies would show some spunk and show their anger at this gross violation of civil liberties and human rights.
I wonder how the American media and Congress and the White House would act if it turned out one day that Germany had been listening in to all the phone calls, reading all the emails of the president, the vice president, joint chiefs of staff, all the people in the National Security Agency, and every member of Congress. Wonder how it would be then, because we have been doing that to every legislative body, everyone around the world in power, as if we have a right to do it, and they can't challenge us, but no one else has a right to do it to us. I just think that it's just, the system is so corrupt that it is not capable of being changed at this moment with the people in power.
That's called, what you described is called American exceptionalism, which gives us the right to do things that mere mortal nations cannot have the right to do.
You're right. Well, I thank you for the book, America's Deadliest Export, Democracy. William Blum, thank you for doing all the work you've done for the past 40 years on behalf of the American public.
Guy, can I mention my website?
Sure.
It's William Blum, Blum, .org.
We appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye. And finally, just for those of you who need some nutritional help and counseling, you need some to be know what foods to eat to help you get your weight down, get your blood chemistry right, I have some really qualified nutritionists that I've hired. And they're free. You can call them. You can make an appointment. You can get some help. I'm on the road. I can help you. We're flooded each day with people asking me for my help, but I'm out. I won't be able to call you or help you at this time. And when I come back, I help those who are terminally ill. But I have a whole team. I have Larry Hubble, who's a registered dietitian, has a master's degree in nutrition, and who has a long history of helping people. I have some outstanding people. In fact, there one's there today, two are there today. So if you need help getting yourself healthy, getting yourself motivated, learning how to cleanse and detoxify, then call 212-874-4000, 212-874-4000, and get any one of the nutritionists or health counselors to guide you in the process. And it's a public service. It's free. 212-874-4000. 212-874-4000. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone. Let's say hello to you, Therese Lead. Hi, you, Therese.
Hello, Gary. How are you doing today?
Doing great, thank you.
Well, today we're talking about strong-arming justice, the NYPD, chokeholds, and the law.
Excellent. Right now, you, Therese Lead.